Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
No, I don't, to be honest. I feel like everybody was off. Everybody was distracted. I don't know why. Probably because the All-Star break is really close. Tomorrow is the last game of the first half, and I don't think that way, but I don't think we were on today. It's really hard. It's really hard, especially when you want to win. You want to fight for anything that is in your control, but also I have to understand that this is a team effort, and I cannot take control with my hands. So I had to let a lot of things go, and we're having a tough stretch right now. I think we have to turn it around, but like I said, it's a team effort. It's not individual effort.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's Wilson Contreras. And we're still kind of watching with fascination the fallout to this story, because I believe there is still some uncertainty.
Well, I think so.
We don't know what this story, how it will end.
How do you think it's going to go?
Well, I think,
how does this end?
You just said it. Has he got himself on the list of people that could be headed out of town? I think that would be a mistake. I think if you look at the roster, look, they don't have an obvious closer that's going to take over if you're trading Kimbrel in the next week. We know that. They're going to be a significantly worse team without their closer, who has been absolutely shut down fantastic this year.
Right.
But
big mistake.
But the pitcher.
Yeah.
You get rid of, I'm sorry, the catcher. You get rid of the catcher.
Big mistake.
Who's playing catcher?
Big mistake.
How are you putting a team together?
He is your most valuable player.
Yeah.
Or if you want to put it in terms of assets, he's your most valuable asset because of the drop-off between him and his replacement. And when you do that calculus throughout the roster, there's nobody that means more to the Cubs moving forward, whether it's this year or next, than Wilson Contreras. You can point out Miguel Amaya in the minors and how his timetable is, you know, on schedule, and all of those things may be true. But I think that if you get rid of Wilson Contreras when you don't have to, before you have to, because he spoke out of turn, because he's an emotional player, then you're being inconsistent. Because if Jed Hoyer said on Thursday, the way that he will approach this in the way that he should is he's removing sentimentality from the equation, right? So essentially, he's going to be acting without emotion in determining whether to trade Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, or Craig Kimbrel, or anyone else, without emotion, then you can't suddenly say, my feelings are hurt because my catcher called out the team publicly. Either or, right? You can't just say, I'm not going to be sentimental, but I'm going to be sensitive.
Well, that's the huge error of it. I mean,
would be the mistake.
I understand the difficulty of managing other personalities, of trying to get everybody on board with what your plan is, your idea is. I understand the complexity of putting together a team, but you cannot allow emotion to dictate your judgment. You have to be able to accept that there are different... The reason you love Wilson Contreras is because of the emotion,
right?
Because of the way that he has passion for the game, and he expresses that all the time. He wears his heart on his sleeve. Sometimes that will bother people. Sometimes that will come off the wrong way. In this case, obviously him saying that everybody needs to play like me and Javi Baez, that's not going to play in the clubhouse for everyone. There's going to be hurt feelings. There's going to be people that wonder, why don't you mention me? What have I done wrong? I just think that there are different personalities, different types of players, and you got to manage them. And I'm talking about David Ross gluing personalities together. And I was surprised that he did not do a better job of kind of backing Wilson Contreras.
I was too.
But I think it's because he's one of the guys being called out on this whole thing.
I think the manager, the coach, is always going to be the one that is indirectly implicated when a player talks about an effort or focus.
Right.
The way Wilson did. But I don't know that you can be that sensitive if you're the manager. You have to make a decision on your response in that, okay, am I going to be viewed as not backing this guy? Well, yeah, he's not backing his guy. And I know there's been a lot of opinions on this radio station and elsewhere, right, about how, you know, Wilson Contreras was so out of line. I'm not always one to support a player doing what Wilson Contreras did, but I totally understood it in the context of this Cubs season, in the context of what Jed Hoyer said on Thursday, and where this was headed, you know, in terms of the response to that. They were shut out 2 out of 3 games after their president declared the season over. And I don't know that he said it was over and the players proved him correct in 2 of the next 3 games. Wilson is who he is. Love him or leave him. I just am afraid the Cubs are now going to overreact and want to leave him. And, you know, the comparison to Miguel Montero is interesting because they played the same position, but it's not comparable.
No,
Wilson Contreras means much more to this team and this franchise.
He's a much better player, much better
than Montero did at that point.
Yeah. No, he's – listen, it's not remotely comparable. But I do wonder if – I just wonder if this is going to fuel a problem that you're going to have to deal with coming back. See, this is the problem with the rain out is, you know, and maybe it was a good thing. Because it looked like you were giving, you know, we looked at the lineup and Wilson Contreras was not in it. So that had to be punitive because he had gotten a day off on the Thursday. And now here you are on Sunday with a week in front of you. Oh, you know what? Willie needs another day off. No,
yeah.
He doesn't.
Well,
what? Because he shot his mouth off? He needs to sit silently and watch. That's not, I don't think that was a good idea, frankly.
Does that carry over to Friday? We'll find out because Wilson Contreras is not letting this go either because, as we said on Twitter overnight or late last night, he tweets out, Torres will say things to your face, not behind your back or not on your back. So he's paying attention to the way that this is being received. He's paying attention to the way that David Ross responded. We're reading into that, but these players know and that's where they live. They live on social media. They communicate that way. They send messages that way. And I guess we're left to interpret it.
312-644-6767. Let's try Mike. Mike's in Orland Park. Good morning, Mike.
Ask yourself this question. If Contreras has this thought process now and wants to speak up, what's he going to do if you keep him? I'm just saying, if you want to keep him, he's an asset. What's he going to do next year or the year after when they're 25 games under 500 and all these other guys are gone? Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, who knows who they're going to keep. But when they're 25 games under 500 and they're not a good team, what's he going to say then? That's what you have to deal with. And I'm not saying it's a
mountain. You're saying, if I hear you, Mike, that he's a front runner and you can only have him on your team if you're winning. Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying this, that he's not happy now.
Yeah.
Right? The way the team's playing. What's his attitude going to be when the team's worse next year?
Well, they might be worse. I don't know if they're going to be 25 games under 500. I think that the dynamic of the clubhouse might be different. We don't know necessarily what kind of leader Wilson Contreras would be under those circumstances because we haven't really seen him have to lead. You know, David Ross doesn't consider Wilson Contreras a team leader now because he doesn't have to. He hasn't had to. Mm-hmm. He has other guys who are filling that role. Now, in the new Cubs, you know, construction, when you look at the next great Cub team, Jed Hoyer, and next year you have a mix. Maybe Anthony Rizzo and Jason Hayward aren't part of that mix. And Wilson Contreras steps forward and assumes a leadership role and shows us things that we haven't seen. Maybe he's a different kind of leader. I don't know. He's going to be. He seems like he's going to be emotional. He seems like he's going to be strong. But I don't know that those are bad qualities when you're talking about the leader of a sports team, you know, whether it's baseball or any sport.
We have a texter checking in. I find this fascinating. I bet you guys would be praising Anthony Rizzo if he said something like this, saying that he's a great team leader. I don't think that's accurate. First of all, we're not tearing into Wilson Contreras.
Are you listening?
Yeah.
We both have said that David Ross did not have Wilson Contreras' back, and Wilson Contreras had every right to say what he said.
Yes. I think we agree that Wilson Contreras is right.
He's right.
I'm not sure he's right about him and Javi being the only guys that care or that play with emotion, whatever the hell he meant. I don't get that. That got him in trouble. That's really where he kind of faltered. Well, the two of us are trying and no one else is.
Right.
That's not going to play. But I don't think we've torn into him in any fashion. I mean, the guy, I think we've said it repeatedly. He is the passion. He's the heart of this team, man. He is a guy that is transparent in his emotion. He doesn't try to hide how he feels about things. He's honest. He's a Taurus. Just ask
him. He's a Taurus. And if you want a culture of accountability in your clubhouse, then this is the kind of thing you have to be willing to tolerate.
Do you think, okay, so at the end of the season, Mitch Trubisky came out and said something about the culture, or he criticized the culture, some kind of thing like that. Mm-hmm. And there was backlash. Mm-hmm. They didn't like that at all because their culture is the big thing they're proud of, right? That everybody's going to show up at training camp. Every team wants to be us because our defensive players won't turn up at minicamp. I just get myself in trouble. But they did. They talked about how they are the envy of the league because of how great the culture is. And so when he said none of that. Is the same thing going on with Wilson Contreras? If the Cubs have turned into a dead-ass team that is struggling to put together a win while they're losing 11 games, and they win one and then they lose one, and this guy comes out and criticizes the team. Oh, don't say that. No, our whole story is that we're trying hard, that everybody's making an effort. It just, the problem is what he said goes in the face of everything they've been talking about. Well, we could have won this game. We should have won that game. This team is too good. And he's saying the opposite. He's saying that we got some dead arse players.
Well, that's why we're a dead arse team. To me, this reveals. I want to be careful here because, look, if this is a team with a culture as strong as the Cubs claim that it is, and they are where they want to be in terms of, they're not the team on the field, but if they feel good about their leadership and things in the clubhouse, they can absorb this and move on. Look, this wasn't that bad,
no,
Molly.
No, this was
my
nothing.
God.
This,
I mean, we are parsing the language here, but when you really look at it, if you take a step back, what he said was not a direct hit. This was somebody who was being honest, and he let his emotions maybe influence what he said in his words. But come on, guys. Are they that soft where they're allowing what he said, you know, make them question about where they are in terms of a culture? No, come on.
I'm not naming names, but let's say that you got a contract offer that was well below what you wanted, and you realize that maybe you're not going to be Cub for life, and you realize that there's a future someplace else and it could come up quickly. Is it not virtually impossible to keep yourself professional and engaged? I mean, are some of these guys already watching this 11-game losing streak, hearing what the team president has to say of it, and understanding, you know what, I'm out of here. I'm gone. I'm no longer going to be here. They're looking to get rid of me. They don't like me anymore. Doesn't that bleed into?
You're not naming names, but if you're looking at Anthony Rizzo's numbers since mid-June, I'd wonder about his focus too occasionally. That's not fair to say it that way.
No, it's not.
But certainly he hasn't produced. And
yes,
you know,
he's had a bad back.
He has had a bad back, and that's contributed to it. But I do think that when you are where the Cubs are, it's fair game. I just don't think.
Do you know what creates back pain? Tension, stress, uncertainty about the future. That will tighten up the
back. Not from carrying his team.
Well, oh boy. Wow. That's pretty cold. We're trying to be nice about it, but I think they're staring down a major. What you're looking at here with all these contracts coming up and the trade deadline sitting there, and you tried to move the guy.
Transformation.
That's what
the transformational phase for the Cubs right now.
Yep.
And look, in fairness to Anthony Rizzo, the optics of the leadership struggle, tug of war, conflict. Let's call it a conflict. They're there. I mean, they were there in San Francisco when the dugout, when Wilson Contreras was going at it with Anthony Rizzo, exchanging words that were later sort of rationalized and explained. And they're there now because he wasn't naming names. But you have to wonder if it's pitting Contreras and Baez and Hayward and Rizzo. And not just because they're on different sides of the vaccination issue, but because
it's another one.
That you can't ignore that when you have things like this pop up. When you have a bad team, everything that potentially contributes to it is fair game. And this is an issue when you talk about the culture in a clubhouse for a team that is in free fall.
312-644-6767. Is this a team in free fall? Is this the end? Are we staring down the end here? And boy, you know, out with a whimper, not with a bang, right? Isn't it kind of depressing, the idea that this would be, if this is how it ends, if this era ends with like a mass white flag type trade, who's on board with that?
Well, the white flag's waving, but who goes first? You know, I guess that's when Jed.
Are you talking about the W? You got to fly the
no,
W.
No, not the W. I'm talking about the flag that Jed planted into the ground on Thursday when the public surrender took place.
Wow. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Ultimately, you know, my job is, you know, to do what I think is the right thing for, you know, the health of this franchise. And, you know, I want to make sure that we can build, you know, that next great Cubs team. And I think when you look at, you know, service time of players, you know, we always talk about, you know, we had a window where we had these players that were young and inexpensive, and they got more expensive through arbitration. And then some of these guys hit free agency. And, you know, realistically, we've been probably the most stable roster in baseball over the last 7 years. We've had the same guys. That lack of turnover is really rare. And I think we have some inevitable turnover that's probably going to happen now with guys hitting free agency and guys getting a little bit older. You know, we need to, it's a young person's game. We need to make sure we have a lot of young talent, and we need to make sure that we're not afraid of roster turnover, you know, based on sentimentality. We have to think about, you know, what is the right thing for this organization long-term. And that means, you know, kind of compartmentalizing some of those things.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the Cubs president, Jed Hoyer, and he's talking about what inevitably will be a rebuild, a whatever way you want to term it. Maybe they can't strip it down to the nails, but
remodel.
Pretty serious kind of remodel, if that's the word.
Renovation. There's a lot of R words you could go. Yeah. Rehab. I well, not in that way.
I'm not going to rehab. Okay. No.
Yeah. They've got to do something. They've got to pivot now, and they have to get what they can for assets before they walk out the door for nothing. And I think the process will begin with Craig Kimbrel. You have teams in the mix that need a closer and are willing to pay for a closer. He's the most likely. Then I think probably Chris Bryant. You know, you look at some of the inevitability there and the reality of what teams can do with him. You know, maybe Rizzo. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of guys in demand.
It's wild.
But are teams in demand for a first baseman who's not hitting at a very high clip right now? But
I think Boston needs a first baseman. He's like 100 points better than their guy. What's that guy's name?
Yankees? Yankees too, maybe?
The Yankees aren't going anywhere, are they?
No, but they are just likely to pieces. Be
they
out
might
of habit.
Sell.
Buyers, they could be sellers.
Who knows? The Yankees are garbage. They're not playing well.
I think Javi Baez is also possible, but there's a lot of shortstops out there. I think he's one of the four. I think we talked about the other day. Most likely to stay.
Can he play second?
Yes, absolutely.
I was making a joke. I was making a stocks reference.
There would be a huge Cub tax there. By the way, do you think Tim Anderson and Trevor Story got to the park a little bit early yesterday before the home run derby and kind of worked on the pivot?
You know, I keep wondering, and I'm not joking about this, shouldn't the Sox players, like Liam Hendricks is just, he lights up like a firefly whenever there's a camera around and he's ready to talk and he's sensational. Are all the Sox players out there recruiting or are they being recruited? If you're Lance Lynn or Carlos Rodon, is somebody whispering in your ear or are you saying, hey, come join us, come join us? One of the things that Hendricks said, which I thought was very interesting, is that the Sox feel like they've underachieved even though they're playing as well as they have.
Their 19 record, games over.
He said their record may be really good, but we know we should be better. That we can
that's
be
crazy.
Better. He said that's the vibe.
Blimey, that's
they
crazy.
They don't feel like within the group, they don't feel right. Like they've reached their
carry
how good
out.
They can be.
So what? They're recruiting talent?
Well, don't you? Hey,
no.
Did you ever follow the NBA?
Yes, I did.
That's all people do is recruit guys and agree to play together.
Okay.
I want my all-stars bringing all-stars with them.
Why?
Why not?
Why?
Get better.
You don't really have anything to recruit. It's like going out and offering
scholarships.
Who's the Arizona
second baseman? Well, don't you have to have a kind word to him?
Escobar?
Thank you.
Okay, but you're not going have to talk him into any sort of trade.
Hey, Adam Frazier, what are you up to?
Well,
get over here.
Get over here. But he's not going to be able to get in ear of the general manager.
You just made a joke about Trevor Story turning a double play with
Tim Anderson. Yeah.
Isn't that the same thing that I'm talking about? Am I not saying exactly what you're saying?
Yeah, but
you don't like the recruitment element.
The recruitment element is unnecessary because I don't know that they will have the say in where they go. It's fun to consider. I think the only reason I mentioned, come to think of it though, if Tim Anderson wants to try to turn the double, maybe they could have like infield practice.
See, here you go. You like, come to think of it.
Well, thinking out loud here. So Trevor Story and Escobar and Adam Frazier could line up at second base. And Tim Anderson could line up at shortstop. And whoever he is the smoothest turn with on the double play combination, that's who they trade for. And they could get Tim's input at who he finds easiest to deal with.
Well, I like that. I mean, look, there's nothing wrong with getting input. There's nothing wrong. You don't have to follow it, but you can let a guy have his say. Hey,
but I think it's more likely
this guy?
That guys like Rodon and Lance Lynn are being recruited by other players than they are recruiting to the White Sox because the White Sox, frankly, they could recruit, but they have no spots available.
Well,
what don't they have moving forward?
Second baseman.
Nick Madrigal's coming back.
Yeah, not this year.
But if you're recruiting for the future, then
I'm recruiting for a World Series championship, man. Where you been?
Well, they're going to go out and take care of business, regardless of the guys. If they don't want to come to Chicago, they're coming to Chicago if they trade for them. They're not going to have much say in the matter. Players don't.
Yeah, I suppose that's true in baseball. Players don't, and you can't force a trade in the same fashion that you can in other sports. And it's a lot different than the NBA. I get all that.
By the way. If Eduardo Escobar needs to be recruited to go from the historically bad Arizona Diamondbacks to the World Series caliber contending Chicago White Sox, then there's something wrong with him. You don't want him if he has to be convinced to come to Chicago.
Just saying a kind word goes a long way. That's all I'm saying. You know, you could give a guy a greeting and it'd mean the world to him.
It would.
If you were kind to a guy in the morning, if you just said, hey, how you doing? You don't have any idea how much that would help.
I'm sorry. Didn't it look like Tim Anderson was having some fun, though? I mean, typically,
yes.
He was welcoming people.
Oh,
he was being himself. He enjoyed the moment. He appreciated the first-time All-Star status is a guy that you think is first of several, probably in his career to come. But it looked like he was soaking in the atmosphere and having the time of his life.
Well, I really thought that of all the All-Stars. I mean, I'm talking about different guys from different teams. I mean, it's a cool thing to be among the best of the best. It is a wonderful thing to make it to an All-Star game and to have that treatment. I think it's delightful.
Yeah, Tim Anderson said when they named him to as a reserve to replace Carlos Correa, that when they introduced him as all-star shortstop Tim Anderson, it hit a little different.
Yeah.
And I think that forevermore, he's now all-star shortstop, Tim Anderson. We still hear Ron Coomer introduced as an all-star.
Yeah.
You know, Ron Coomer, because once you achieve that status, it's there forever.
Right.
And that's a point in your career, a status that you achieve that is, it is special. And, you know, Tim Anderson has earned it. And anyone who watches him play and has watched him progress knows that this was inevitable. He is an all-star shortstop.
It's why it means so much when you can put the HOF after your autograph, and it becomes more valuable because that is a designation that separates you from everybody else, and it's a glorious and wondrous thing. And I think that all-star is the first kind of step if you're eventually going to get HOF. And I'm not saying that any of the four White Sox are headed to the HOF. I just think that it's a glorious stepping stone, if you will. And Tim's young enough that, what is he, 28?
Yeah.
That he could put together four or five of these.
He's 28, kind of, even though you have him, you know, traded in 2028?
No, I mentioned that they drafted two shortstops. That's all I said. And I said that they're young enough that they could develop for 7 years. And when Tim's 35, maybe he's ready to stop being the shortstop.
I'd have to check the tape, but I think you put him on the clock.
I think that was really kind of me to give him until 35 as the White Sox shortstop.
Right. I mean, seven more good years.
What would be wrong with seven
good
years?
In the next 7 years, how many World Series championships will the White Sox win? How many?
Five out of seven. What are you laughing at?
How many will they play in the next 7 years?
Seven.
Realistically.
Five. Four?
I think in the next 7 years, you could see the White Sox playing in the World Series twice.
You're very negative.
No, I'm not.
Why are you so down?
That would be great.
Sox.
You know what the Cubs would give to have another chance to return to the World Series after 2016? That is going to leave a historical blemish on this era.
Because, really?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. You know what? I got to tell you.
Am I being negative this morning?
Well, no. It's just I wonder if people remember what it was like. I mean,
doesn't
my
matter.
Entire
it doesn't
life,
matter. You
the
know,
Cubs
you know better.
Were
that.
Wait till next year.
No.
It was always the, you know, they had the full park and they were singing that dumb song and they
go
weren't going
again.
Anywhere.
You can't
you know,
go back to that.
You win your last game of the year
no.
and it's, you know,
no.
go Cubs, go. It didn't matter
no. No,
that,
no, no,
that
no.
it was just like a wasted season. And then you end, what was it, 108 years. Was there how many humans lasted that long, and how, they would remember? You know, you'd have to be like 118 to have remembered the last one and then this one. I think that people are just forgetting how awful things were
no,
and how
I don't agree.
Bitter things were,
no.
and they did it and they got there. And I get it. You know, there was this sense of hope. There was this sense of these young players that were going to win forever. And it just didn't, it didn't happen. You got to a couple of National League Championship Series though, right? Didn't the Dodgers beat you at one point?
Yeah, sure.
I'm just saying.
You were there 3 years in a row.
Yes.
And then the offense broke and you never fixed
okay,
it.
Okay, but.
And you had hopes
you
to
return. You
had
3 years and you thought you'd get another one, but. My God, you ended that. You ended that drought. That was incredible, and that has to be appreciated. I don't look back
Stop.
On this. I'm totally serious. I don't look back and say, "Oh my God, why didn't they win three?" I look back and say, "My God, they did it. They won one," and I think that's a glorious achievement. And I think the organization is trying to figure out how to do it again.
Maybe today you say that, but I think in 5 years you'll look back and you'll say, not necessarily, "Why didn't they win three?" Let's be realistic here. That's why I hate when. You know, Rick Kahn talks about multiple championships, plural. Win one and then reevaluate and then in the context of the next one, see where you are. What the Cubs did in 2016 was they won one and they looked positioned to win another, one more. And I think in 5 years, you look back and you wonder, boy, why didn't they win one more? Why didn't not three more or two more, one more? Because two World Series championships in that window of time while it was open would have been realistic and attainable. And I just think that's the disappointment. So, yeah, I don't think that's overstating it by saying that you look back at this era, the golden age of Cub baseball, given what we expected and given what was produced, and feel a sense of disappointment. If you want to call that a historical blemish or a blot
on
a resume.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think it's different. You know, the Bears winning a Super Bowl and only managing the one with the most dominant defense we had seen in mm-hmm. the NFL to that point, maybe ever. That's how good they were.
Okay.
And then they don't win another one. That's significantly worse than what the Cubs went through.
Well, it might be a degree of worse, but it's still bad, right? And you still remember that as an era that feels somewhat unfulfilled.
I think that these Cubs are going to be celebrated in this town forever. And I think that...
So are the Bears. But you still look back and you feel a sense of unfulfillment because they didn't win again. I think you might feel differently if it were the White Sox.
I saw the White Sox win in World
Series. I know, but you didn't get a sense in 2005. I think that was the difference. I mean, you it was and I don't want to speak on behalf of Sox fans, but don't you feel like in 2005 there was such a sense of, wow, I cannot believe this just happened. This is terrific. But did you really feel a sense that the window was open for the next 5 years you were going to win again?
But see, this is what I'm saying. I told you. Well, I sat there when they beat Boston in the first series. I just sat on the couch staring at the screen, and my wife said, "What's wrong with you? Aren't you happy?" And I said, "I don't think I've ever seen the Sox win a playoff series." And then it flashed up that they hadn't won a playoff series since God knows when, like my pre-existence. And I felt this stunned amazement that they had won. And then when they went through and they won fairly easily, if you recall, it was just extraordinary. I was left in a state of almost kind of just shock. I wasn't
euphoria.
It wasn't euphoria. It wasn't.
No?
It was more like, oh my God, like I watched a whole season and then it can end with a title and then it's over and you won. Like I hadn't seen that in my lifetime. And I think people forget what that feeling is like. And it's just most amazing feeling ever.
And I'm sure that those feelings were just as profound for Cubs fans in 2016.
Right.
But I feel like when you had Theo Epstein come in and the orchestrated losing and then the rebuild in 2015 and 2016, you felt like you were positioned to do it again. I don't feel like the 2016 World Series felt like it was the end of something and the pinnacle necessarily. It represented 108 years of futility that was over. But you thought you were going to do it again.
Yeah, you did think there was more
there.
And
you didn't.
But I think when you look back on it, your takeaway won't be, oh, they only got one. I think your takeaway will be like, God, I saw that happen.
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean,
everyone's going to have to answer that question themselves.
Yeah, you're right.
And I'm just answering from right now. Maybe we're too close to it, but right now I feel like there's going to be an emptiness that accompanies all of that sort of satisfaction.
But I think that this is a little bit different because you had, you know, the historical biblical losses. You had the pandemic. You had contracts of players that maybe you could have gotten done or worked out, and then you couldn't. You know, weren't they on the cusp of signing Baez, and that deal's gone. So it's just, I think it's a little bit different because there were some extenuating circumstances where this team could blow up quicker than maybe any of us realized.
Yeah, that is going to be the case, but those details aren't ones that you considered when you were planning on another World Series parade.
All right, we're going to bring in Jim Callis. We're going to talk about the future, Mr. Gitz. We're going to find out if indeed there can be another great Cubs team. And we'll ask him flat out, who drafted the best high school shortstop? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
With the 21st pick of the 2021 MLB draft, the Chicago Cubs select Jordan Wicks, a left-handed pitcher from Kansas State. With the 22nd pick of the 2021 MLB draft, the Chicago White Sox select Colson Montgomery, a shortstop from Southridge High School in Huntingburg, Indiana.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Our thanks to the fine folks at the MLB Network for the highlights, and we are delighted to welcome in the man himself. Jim Callis knows more about the MLB draft than you will ever, ever have a chance to learn, and he covers that and the prospects for MLB Pipeline at MLB.com. And Jim, it's always an honor and a joy, and we welcome you on the Home Run In Hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Hey, Jim.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Well, we're wondering how our teams are doing. You know, we've decided that there's a rebuild going on with the Cubs, apparently. And we know they need pitching, and we know they got a left-handed pitcher. And then they doubled back and get a high school shortstop. But unfortunately, we don't know how good these guys are or how well they did. And certainly the White Sox taking a couple of high school shortstops, one probably a third baseman. How did they do in the first couple picks? Were you surprised by anything that happened with our local teams?
No, I mean, with the Cubs, I think the nice thing was I thought Jordan Wicks was probably going to go a few picks before 21. So I thought that was a really nice get, you know, especially for a franchise that has really struggled to develop pitching. They got the best left-hander in this draft, in my mind. You know, he's got the best changeup in the draft, too. I mean, it's a real weapon. Low 90s guy who's breaking ball improved this year. I think that was a really, really good pick, like a nice value there. He should have probably gone about five picks before them. So I think for a, you know, like I said, an organization needs pitching. That was a nice get. You know, James Triantos, the guy they got in the second round, the shortstop, he actually, I'm several years removed from high school, but he's from my arch rival high school growing up, James Madison there in Vienna. I went to Oakton. He's a really good hitter, and he's a guy who had a lot of what they call late helium. He was really rising late. You know, one of the better high school hitters in the draft, maybe moves off shortstop, but a really intriguing bat. The one that interests me some too, well, their top four picks are where they're going to put most of their money because they went pretty much seniors after that. But Drew Gray, who's an Illinois kid who played at the IMG Academy in Florida, is interesting. I thought he was more of a left-handed pitcher. And, you know, on our draft tracker, we have him listed as an outfielder, so I don't remember offhand. Yesterday was a blur if they drafted him as an outfielder. But I thought he was more of a lefty. He had kind of an up-and-down year, but that could be a good value because he was supposed to go. You know, he was maybe a top 50 pick coming into the year. He's got some upside on the mound, too. And then the fourth rounder, Christian Franklin, real athletic guy, has solid tools across the board, little inconsistent with the bat. There's some swing and miss to him. But I thought Christian Franklin was a second-round pick. So there's some upside at the top of this draft. And I wonder, again, when they were doing the picks yesterday, they're so fast and furious, and we're commenting on each one. I missed whether they announced Gray as an outfielder or a left-handed pitcher. I really thought he was more of a left-handed pitcher.
Jim, you did a terrific job last couple of days, thanks. Especially yesterday. So thank you for joining us this morning. You got to be wiped out. But let's look at the first-rounders. You look at Jordan Wicks, and I'm surprised – that, you know, he does come across as the best left-hander in the draft, according to a lot of the reports. Not high velocity, but seems to have very good polish. You mentioned about his timeline, won't need much time in the minors. How quickly can he get up there? And then Colson Montgomery, the White Sox shortstop, the high school all-around athlete from Southridge High School in Huntingtonburg, Indiana, wants to stay at short, could be a third baseman projected. You compare him to a little bit look like Corey Seager. Will he stay at shortstop?
You know, it's funny because, and I'm guilty of this, and I still do it anyway. Like, it's easy to look at a 6'4 guy and say, okay, well, he's not going to move it short. You know, he's not, I mean, he's probably, you know, a fringy runner. He's not the quickest guy in the world. I mean, really good basketball player, basketball. It holds his school scoring record. You know, he moves pretty well. I mean, I think you got to wait and see. He'll open his career at shortstop. I'll admit. You know, I mean, the Corey Seager's comparison is the obvious one. He's a left-handed hitter. He should hit for average and power. You know, a lot of people make that. And I looked at Corey Seager come out of high school. And I'm like, okay, 6'4", he's not the fastest guy in the world. He's going to have to move. And Corey Seager plays fine at shortstop. So I think he'll get a chance. And, you know, for the White Sox, I think the White Sox are elated because, you know, it's funny. My last mock draft, I had Colson Montgomery going to the Cubs. But everybody knew the White Sox loved him. And he was going to be their pick if he got to him, and he was. But I really think there's a very good chance if Colson Montgomery had gone 21 to the Cubs, that Wes Kath would have been the White Sox first-round pick.
Wow.
And instead, they got Wes Kath with their second-round pick. You know, we've talked about bonus pools before, and you can move money around and push guys down if you offer them money and they hold fast. But, I mean, Wes Kath is a really, really good hitter, too. And he had some helium as the draft was approaching. You know, he was a high school shortstop. I think he's definitely moving to third. You know, he's got a chance to hit for average and power, and he's a left-handed hitter too. I mean, if you're plotting this out, you know, 5 years down the road, I mean, the White Sox obviously have good players on their big league club right now too because it's a really good team. But, like, you could see maybe Colson Montgomery is the shortstop of the future and Wes Kath is the third baseman of the future. And I have not talked to Mike Shirley
since the draft, well, I guess we're still going on today, but since the, you know, yesterday ended, but like they have to be elated because they, I mean, they literally got two guys. They would have, they were overjoyed to get Montgomery, and they would have been very happy to take West Calf at 22 also.
It's fascinating because I heard him say that the two players they took, what he liked is that they can kind of grow together. And it made you think of the two high school pitchers they took. It made you think of Berger and Sheets. You know, two guys that are similar in position, similar in kind of profile, but, you know, guys that will come up together. I don't know if that helps or not, but it was interesting to hear him say it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, if you're a big league team, you like to see a core players come up together if you can. And like I said, I mean, nobody's phasing out Tim Anderson or Yoan Moncada, but again, you know, 5 years from now, this could be the left side of their infield. And it's kind of cool to watch those guys develop. And, I mean, they're, you know, I don't know how much they know each other from the showcase circuit, you know, but I'm sure they've run into each other, and I think it'll be kind of cool. And, you know, they got a pitcher in the fifth round, Tanner McDougal out of Nevada, who will probably kind of grow along with those guys. He's a high school kid. And I saw him, yeah, I don't think the draft combine, if you talk to teams for the most part, I think they got more value out of interviewing players than they did evaluating players because they've seen these guys for over a year and they didn't do that much. But McDougal was one of the high school kids who actually played in the game. They had a few high school games. Most of it, like Colson Montgomery didn't play in games. West Calf, I don't think, was there. But McDougal actually pitched really well. And I think McDougal helped himself combine. And I think he'll be kind of growing along with those guys too.
You know, Jim, when you look at the White Sox and how quickly they have accelerated their prospects, their draft picks in recent years, you look at Madrigal and Crochet and certainly Andrew Vaughn. Did they take a different approach this year in looking at the high school kids? Is that coincidence or by design? And because maybe they felt like, okay, now with the timetable, you look at the future and they can take more time to develop players. They will go after younger guys because they don't need the immediate help that they might have needed when they drafted those others.
Yeah, you know, I feel like they kind of drafted the best available players. It was interesting because there was a lot of talk that the White Sox, you know, because they have a very good big league team, but face it, I mean, they promoted so many guys. You know, a lot of their better prospects are super young guys who are struggling in low class A Kannapolis. That, you know, their farm system's gone from one of the best in baseball to right now. It's not nearly as good as it was, say, 3 years ago when all these guys were in the system before they got to Chicago. And I heard, you know, there was talk that upper management maybe wanted to get some college pitching in the first couple rounds so they could have some guys who might be able to, you know, because they're probably a few years from having impact guys get to Chicago after we've seen a bunch of them get there recently. And then to get some college pitching in particular to guys who can move quick and can maybe bridge the gap while they wait for some of these younger guys to develop. And they didn't do that at all. They came out and took high school hitters with their first two picks. But yeah, I mean, getting back to what you said, I don't know if it was purposeful, but they do have that luxury. This isn't a team, you know, frankly. And again, I think the Cubs took the best guys too. But I mean, look, the Cubs are going backwards. The Cubs have not been able to develop pitching. They don't have a particularly deep farm system right now. The Cubs are at a crossroads, whereas the White Sox, even if their farm system did nothing for a couple of years, are going to be one of the best teams in the American League, so they can be patient. So, again, I don't know if it was on purpose, but I do agree that they do have a luxury that the Cubs do not right now.
They have got a lot of draft picks on the roster right now because they brought up some guys, and they, you know, I keep reading about how well the Sox have done in the draft just because they've had injuries and they've moved so many guys up. Is that illusion or fact from your viewpoint, Jim?
No, I think it's true. I mean, and look, I mean, you know, they had some early picks. I mean, I know he's hurt, but, you know, Madrigal was up, yep, you know, and playing well, and Vaughn was up, and other guys. But, I mean, the thing that's impressed me is, you know, I mean, Zach Collins has done a nice job as, like, an extra catcher and, you know, slugger off the bench. And, you know, Gavin Sheets is hit for power. And, you know, Jake Berger, who, you know, basically didn't play for 3 years, has provided a spark the last week. So, and, you know, look, you know, Collins was first-round pick, Berger was first-round pick, Sheets was second-round pick. But at the same time, like, those guys had leveled off some. Those guys were not top 100 prospects. They were not, like, I do our White Sox list. I don't even think, you know, they were necessarily top 10 prospects until guys got promoted, you know, and they moved up our top 30 list. But that's what's really impressed me. I mean, not that everybody in Chicago doesn't know this, but I mean, yes, the White Sox are playing really well. If you look at the injuries they've had to deal with, you know, it'd be very easy for the White Sox, instead of being, you know, what are they, 54 and 35, maybe like, you know, 45 and 44, just because, I mean, they've been ravaged pretty good by injuries. So, like the farm system, I think, deserves a lot of credit, not just big name guys coming up and you know, doing what was kind of hoped, but the, you know, guys who weren't as big names coming up and making contributions when they needed them.
Great stuff, Jim. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you talking to us in the midst of all this. And we know how busy you are and love getting a chance to pick it apart with you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim. Great insight.
Oh, yeah. No, I always enjoy talking to you guys, too. Take care, and we'll see what happens in rounds 11 through 20 today.
Outstanding.
Look forward to it.
Should be fun. Yeah. Jim Callis, senior writer, MLB Pipeline. And you see him, of course, on MLB.com. I was just reading some of the Twitter guesstimation that the White Sox, because of the way they drafted kind of senior pitchers, they will have probably enough money to go over slot a little bit with their 11th round pick. So that's just
that's the
weird way the draft works.
Did you see who went in the 10th round? A young man who Cubs fans saw at a very young age when he was a little boy, Darren Baker.
Oh, gosh.
Drafted in the 10th round by the Nationals.
Yeah.
Dusty's son.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Good for him. There's a lot of those great stories out there. That's wonderful. I love when sons of are brought in, and especially that's a great one. That's a good point to make there, David. Thank you for that. I will go look that up.
Well, I'm here for all things baseball draft.
Mully and Hawk. 312-644-6767, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh.